My name is Alison Wright. I trained as a systems engineer with IBM. I have a degree in chemistry management science, then worked in higher education. So I started to notice some loopholes in Companies House that compromised any due diligence, all due diligence, all audits, all KYC, know your customer. And anti-money laundering checks. So, with that knowledge, I then started looking at our political leaders to see if they had these features, and preparing compliance assessments accordingly, some of which I've published.
In a nutshell, that means just different, like almost like different spellings of the name, maybe including an initial, things like that. Even though it's the same person, they may have, two, three, even more profiles on Companies House. So you will say, yes, they are directors of other businesses, but it will only show you certain businesses connected with that specific spelling or profile.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so they might leave out a middle name, or they've used. So it's, identities are established on three factors. It's the name, date of birth, and usual residential address, which you've got a duty to keep up to date. And then if you vary anything, even in your address, I think that creates a second identity as well. I haven't actually confirmed that completely. Because you can't see usual residential addresses. That information is not made public. But yeah, so if you provide an address in Scotland for one identity and an address in England for another identity, that's the sort of thing that's going on. And that is obvious because in the record it says nationality, place of residence, and where you are, where that response is. That might say Scotland, or, and then you know that they've used a different residential address.
Now, a lot of the information that you're publishing, even though it's actually devastating, I mean, in terms of standards in public life being undermined, being basically like a pantomime, a bit of a joke, we have had the situation recently with these donations to Nigel Farage, which have been highly criticised on the media, even though it hasn't actually been through any kind of like litmus test of the Commissioner for Parliamentary Standards. So this is really, as we see so much nowadays, the press coverage from London all over the country, whether it's radio, TV, broadcast journalism, or newspapers, is about accusations. It's not actually about decisions having been made through any kind of fair process and open process. So, and as a result of that, it's people will understand that we have this guy who's called the Commissioner for Parliamentary Standards. So I suppose he's supposed to be an impartial civil servant. So can you just tell us a bit about this process by which members of Parliament and possibly even civil servants, I don't know, but they seem to be more powerful in some ways, but how they are held to account?
Well, there's a code of conduct, a parliamentary code of conduct, that the Commissioner for Standards is responsible for making sure that's upheld. But the terms of that code of conduct are very, very specific, but quite narrow. But they do include the MPs must declare all their interests, including their directorships, etc. Even if they're unpaid directorships, they have to be declared. Now, that's because the Companies Act says directors have a duty to declare their interests. Now, you can declare them verbally at a meeting, and you can declare them in a register, which is what the purpose of the register of interests. So interests that you hold all the time, you put in the register of interests, and then you flag any of those verbally in a declaration in the meeting where or meet or process that you're going through that might present a conflict. Now, I was looking at the Localism Act. If a mayor fails to declare his interests, then he's guilty of a crime through the Localism Act, but they don't seem to have that specified for parliamentarians or peers in the House of Lords, that it's a crime. So what the process is, if you can identify an interest that they haven't declared, and then you write to the Commissioner for Standards, and he finds prima facie evidence that you're correct, then he challenges the MP. And the MP has to respond. Now the response might be, "Oh yes, and it's quite likely in Andy Burnham's case. Oh yes, I haven't done it because it was really hectic, and I wasn't ready by the 13th of July to declare the interests or whichever date the closing date was." And he may well declare it in the next one. Well, he'll have to declare it because now so the commissioner asks, and then he gets a response back, and then he decides if a letter of apology is needed, or that's the worst of the wrapping over the hand is that they have to write a letter of apology. I haven't had great success with the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards. And in fact, I have a judicial review still pending against the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards. So he's not going to be very welcoming of my letter, I'm sure. Because the last Attorney General, Hermer, he failed to declare an interest that was active when he joined Parliament, when he was put into position. And so the Parliamentary Standards Commissioner failed to acknowledge that it was a problem. And that's why I've taken that to judicial review. And that judicial review is still pending. And now I'm waiting permission. It's been accepted. We've been through the first two or three hurdles of a judicial review there. But now I'm waiting for Justice Sweeting to give it permission to go ahead, and then it'll be heard. But the courts are very busy, of course.
So you're talking about the Lords Commissioners for Standards. There's also a Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards, which is actually really to do with the House of Commons, although Parliament is supposed to be both the House of Commons and the House of Lords. Anyway, let's take a look at the House of Commons guy.
Well, look, this Parliamentary Standards Commissioner, there's an article by Declassified UK about him. Daniel Greenberg's his name.
Yes.
They're accusing him of bias over treatment of pro-Israeli politicians. He's voiced support for the Israeli genocide months after he took his role. This was published 16th of June last year on Declassified UK. He's meant to be impartial, but he's voiced support for the Israeli genocide after being appointed to his role in 2023. He also implied that any Israeli who refused to serve in the IDF was a coward and a parasite. Now, this individual, Daniel Greenberg, this is Declassified UK, have dug this out. The journalist that did dig this information out was then denied a pass, Martin Williams, to actually cover any coverage to actually go to Westminster. So something here is it rather stinks about this entire system of coverage with this guy Daniel Greenberg, who seems to make no attempt to hide the fact that he is pro the Israeli genocide. He sees anybody that has a conscientious mind in Israel as a inverted commas parasite, and he is prepared to ensure that any journalist that questions him is banned from the parliamentary estate.
Gosh, well, that's news to me. I had not heard that. I haven't heard anything about him actually.
Look, you've been doing quite well with your LinkedIn profile. I'm not sure whereabouts. I mean, do you blog on Substack or anywhere else like that, Alison?
Yes, so I have a Substack and I publish regularly there. I've published about 189 different articles.
Well, these are the sorts of things which the national press should be keeping track of. I mean, all of these things to do with parliamentary standards, you would think, in a normal world, would be the bread and butter of the newspapers, things like the Times, the papers of record. You know, if someone who's supposed to be representing us has lied about their having multiple profiles, whatever it happens to be, whether it's in interests that aren't declared, like Nadeem Zahawi, who was chairing the an organisation of former intelligence officers connected with the far right and Vichy France after the war. He failed to declare that, you know, so which might make and then he had one the secretary from this far right group in his office, and she actually did declare, oh yes, I'm the secretary of this group, and that's how people realized that he anyway. So there's lots and lots of stuff that should be being declared that isn't. This is the bread and butter, at least it should be. And I know, you don't get massive amounts of hits because the algorithms make it difficult to find you, Alison. So even though you're kept off of the mainstream press, you're also being sort of suppressed on the internet. But I know you had a recent article on the Supreme Court, which is this funny court we have in Britain now, which is basically a copy of so much that goes on today of the American system. And so can you just tell us, because that actually did really well. What was going on? What was that about?
So, yes, I did an article on the Supreme Court because I went to look for their register of interests and couldn't find it. And then I found a statement saying that they thought it was too complicated, or words to the effect that it was too complicated for them, so they're not going to be declaring their interests. So I did a Freedom of Information request asking for all information around it. And they've just had to come back and confirm that they don't keep a register of interests, and there's no judges have ever declared any interests, and that's that. But not addressing the fact that they should be declaring their interests. They have a duty under the Companies Act to declare their interests, and this is the apex court. You know, if they're not following the rules, it blows transparency and accountability out of the water.
Well,
So
it
I did.
also, sorry to interrupt you, but it also enables various lobbies to start paying these judges, maybe just as a, maybe, yeah, 30, 40, £100,000 just as a consultant for a chat in a coffee shop.
Yeah, potentially. We just don't know. There's nothing to prevent that for sure.
But that did really well.
So,
What
yeah.
do you think that is?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, normally, once I post it on Substack, I'll go and publish it in LinkedIn, put the link in LinkedIn as well. And now, normally, my articles get 10, 15 impressions in total. That doesn't even mean that people actually read it, it's just that it's been presented to people. And for all of my posts, it's been in that range of 10, 8 to 10. 15. And for this one, it was 27,000 impressions for the Supreme Court article, mainly to senior lawyers. It gives you some analysis on who's looking at your stuff. But my Andy Burnham one has dropped back down to 14 views, I think, or
Well,
impressions.
we're going to hope to increase that a little bit now because that's really why I contacted you, Alison. Again, I mean, I think to be quite frank, we should be doing something maybe every couple of months to just keep a track of this because it is really what you're doing in a way is you're sitting in the sort of cockpit of the plane, which is indicating that it's crashing. And maybe the people sitting in the back should be told. This is all to do with the companies surrounding Andy Burnham. So can you tell us a little bit about them?
Okay, so I went to look in Companies House for anything to do with Andrew Burnham, and there was an identity called Andrew Murray Burnham, which is his name with his date of birth, and it has three companies associated to it. One of those is dissolved, Lee BPT, although it was active when he was a Member of Parliament for Lee. And I've checked his registers of interest around that time. I was only able to find one, but it was within the scope of the time that he was an active director, and he didn't declare it there. So I haven't found any evidence that he declared Lee BPT when he was an MP, and he should have done. But he also has two active companies, which have been very, very recently established, Office of Andy Burnham Limited and Andy Burnham for Leader Limited. Now, they were both established on the 24th of June this year. So, in the midst of him becoming an MP, and just before, sorry. Interrupted. Eric, might you turn the radio off, please? Okay, so he's got these two companies that were incorporated on the 24th of June. He's the sole director and he's the sole person with significant control, with more than 75% of the shares in the limited company. Andy Burnham for Leader, that's set up as, oh, I don't have the details in front of me here. Anyway, Andy Burnham for Leader is set up as a company limited by guarantee, whereas Office of Andy Burnham Limited is set up as a normal private limited company, although the articles associated with it are bespoke, they're tailored, they're different from any other articles I've seen before. And they allow for a lot of delegation of powers to committees. So it almost looks like it's been set up as a sort of private, co it's a private company, it's a replica of his parliamentary role. And the risk is that companies may think they're dealing with the office of Andy Burnham as Prime Minister when they're actually dealing with Office of Andy Burnham Limited. So,
Now let's try and place this. What date did you say these companies were created?
24th of June this year.
Right, so that's literally just a few days after he resigned as the mayor of Manchester. The Makerfield by-election was announced, and then he assumed office as the leader of the Labour Party. That's right, 17th of July. Then he was Prime Minister on the 20th of July. So this is pretty much as soon as it had been arranged for him to resign, because this whole process, I think, most people with a brain are questioning who decided that Burnham was going to be the new Prime Minister, because it certainly wasn't the Labour Party members or the Parliamentary Labour Party. There was no vote of any sort, no competition. Somebody somewhere decided he was taking over.
That's right. Yes, he just whooshed into position.
Can you just reiterate what you think the problem with these businesses, these companies is? And is it normal for one person to just be, surely don't you have to have at least two directors for it to be a business?
No, sole directorships are normal. That's fine, but not normal for MPs. MPs normally resign from their private or used to normally resign from those sort of private roles. Whereas this vehicle has been set up to, operate alongside his work as prime minister. So whilst it's okay for it to be a single person as a director, the bespoke articles, I would, again, they're not illegal. Like you can have bespoke articles, but from the public's point of view, we need to be wary of the fact that he has these powers where he can delegate powers to committees and through the company and make, potentially making purchase decisions.
Right, so it's almost like a kind of shadow government potentially there.
That's a reasonable description, yeah. It has the potential for being used for that, yes. And because it's a new company, it won't be publishing its accounts for another 18 months. And within the bespoke articles, there's sort of rules around nobody seeing the, I can't quite remember, but not seeing the full. He doesn't have to, because he's a sole, he's the only person that has to see the accounts. Nobody else has to see them. You see what I mean?
Well, it seems to me that they, if they really wanted to hide this, they should have set up, Andy as basically like a royal charter or something, where nobody could see what was going on at all. But
Yeah.
it's in a way, this is hidden in plain sight. I think what would be nice to do is on our show page at thisweek.org.uk to share these articles of association, because it sounds to me as if there's something very peculiar going on there. And someone has decided that Andy Burnham is, the same people decided to set up a sort of, a shadow organization behind the public face of Downing Street at the same time as they're almost certainly the same people who have decided that Burnham is going to be put in charge. I mean, it certainly doesn't sound in any way democratic. It may even be that he's not aware about very much about what's going on with this business, and he's just being told and advised by SPADs, these special advisors. So anyway, let's try and do that. Get these articles of association. You're quite right, 18 months it will be before anything is published. So, balance sheet, books, this sort of thing, nothing like that was going to be published for a long time. So it's not an established business, and that's why they do things like this. So let's just start. Can I also ask you about Palantir? Because this is another organisation which is, it seems, has got actually no connection with what British people want, what we wish to, we don't wish to have. And quite clearly, if anyone is asked, they'll say no. We don't wish to have a CIA founded and funded private military contractor that's been involved in massacring people in Gaza due to its targeting software in our National Health Service or really anywhere in public life. And it reminds me, Palantir, Alison, of the operation that you described when you were in Africa of international business machines, IBM, moving into these countries, installing IT systems that were then controlling the governments. So anyway, what, maybe you could say a bit about Palantir and about your experience in Africa.
Well, regards to Palantir, I did do an article on Palantir and the UN Special Rapporteur's analysis of companies that are enabling genocide. That's the title of, or words to that effect, the title of their report. And Palantir came in for significant mentions within that report. And it's a concern for us because Palantir have defence and NHS and back office systems for the whole of government contracts. So they are deeply embedded across all arms of government, potentially. Now, with each contract, obviously the data is supposedly held secure for each customer set, and it's separate and it should never be joined up. But you could imagine a potential hypothetical situation could be that Palantir contracted with Office for Andy Burnham Limited. I mean, it wouldn't automatically count as misconduct or a breach, but the combination of Andy Burnham being a domestic, politically exposed person, a PEP, have you heard that one? The combination of him being a politically exposed person, him having sole control of his political purpose companies, and Palantir's substantial and expanding role in the UK government, public sector data and defence infrastructure. It presents a high risk relationship requiring, would really require unusually rigorous transparency, due diligence, and conflict control. Whereas, he's not going to get that because the articles that he's created, prevents any transparency, due diligence, or conflict control.
Yeah,
So,
I imagine this is above Burnham's head, that there's corporate lawyers that have organized this. But what you're describing here, listen, I mean, we don't know. A lot of this is not transparent. Of course, government in a democracy is transparent, but this is not transparent. It's starting to sound a bit like a fascist system. That is to say, a corporate government, really, which is done by corporations who play their cards very close to their chest. And on the and of course, let's not forget that the mass media, people like Sky, ITV now, which has been sold to American Comcast, these are all companies too, corporations too.
It's certainly very technocratic, that's for sure.
Well, you know about Technocracy Inc., don't we? And this plan that Elon Musk's Nazi granddad had back in World War II. In fact, he was being so open about it that he had to move from Canada down to South Africa, which was the only place in the British Empire that full-blooded Nazis could actually still not be arrested and operate, due to the apartheid system down there. And so it could be that that's just what they're implementing here. Anyway, look, Alison, if people are interested in doing things like these freedom of information requests, maybe judicial reviews, can you just give us a few tips of how we can actually sort of prod the legal system to see if we can expose some of this?
Yeah, I think exposing undeclared interests, and particularly also when individuals have multiple identities, is critical to building up the head of steam to getting something done about this. So I would welcome everybody to start with your MP, put his name into Companies House, and locate using his date of birth, potential identities that may be his, and listing and then copying across the data from Companies House into your document, and then looking at the register of interest, the parliamentary register of interest for your MP, seeing what interests he's declared, and checking if he has declared all of the interests in all of his identities for her. So, and if they haven't, then write a letter of complaint to the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards, because the use of mul they have a duty to declare all their interests, and the use of multiple identities compromises audits and anti-money laundering rules.
Right, so you're saying right to Mr. Genocide.
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, this mirrors what happened when I was looking at the Lords, is it the Justice, the Judicial Appointments Commission, No, not them. It was the House of Lords. They've got a senior body, and the head of that herself has multiple identities and fails to declare all of her interests. And she's the one that the Lords Commissioner of Standards got some of the people that I complained about to apologise to for doing it.
Can you remember her name?
Baroness Manningham Buller.
Ah, right. This is the former Director General of MI5,
Yes.
who we've also declassified, do a very good job, actually. I think it might have been the Grey Zone. They published some secret email correspondence between Manningham Buller and the current Director of MI5, who we call Spy Ken, because there's a little doll you can buy in the shop for children called Spy Ken. And it looks very much like him. He's the current. So she's still very much involved in it seems in advising and managing. And this, in a way, goes sort of almost full circle back to Nadeem Zahawi's Pinay Circle group, which is ex-intelligence officers and ex-intelligence bosses getting together with MPs like Nadeem Zahawi, who. He's, he's a very interesting character, very extremely crooked. I mean, he was, was it £15 million of tax, maybe 50, I'm not sure, that he was supposed to be paying when he was Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he was dodging the tax. He was appointed by Boris Johnson. So, there clearly is. I mean, the plane is crashing, if I can say that. That more and more people who are corrupt and crooked are being appointed to the so-called safeguarding style, standards style jobs. And you did mention there something about the Judicial Appointments Committee, because of course that is absolutely key. In any country that has a corrupted judicial appointments process, where people who are easily bribable or blackmailable are put into positions as judges, that society is also, it's heading in a nosedive into the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I published several articles about the Judicial Appointments Commission because I did a due diligence on all of the commissioners that were current at the time I did it, and half of them had multiple identities and really significant interests that they hadn't declared, which raises a point that it seems to be a behaviour of ex or current intelligence operatives who are doing this that have the multiple identities.
Can you just remind us about the easiest place to access some of these articles? I think what I'll try and do, Alison, if I can, is to share your piece on the Andy Burnham and on the Supreme Court, and also on this Judicial Appointments Committee. One of those, whichever is the most horrendous, because if people don't realise this, I mean, for example, this sort of stuff. Back when I first started in journalism in the 1980s. I can tell you any of these would make it onto a Panorama or a World in Action, a First Tuesday, an Open Space. There were probably 13, 14, 15, maybe even regular programs which would look into all of this sort of thing and expose it. And often arrests would follow. I mean, we've sadly seen the death of a lovely guy called Roger Cook, a Kiwi, who used to do his literally doorstep people, his journalistic stings with his cameraman. He'd go and confront people directly with this sort of thing, with another cameraman across the road filming in case the first cameraman got hit with a piece of wood or something. Anyway, so whereabouts can people find your stuff most easily, Alison?
Okay, please look at my Substack. So it's Alison Wright, or what? So it's all one word, no gaps, with a W and one L. AlisonWright.substack.com.
Thank you very much. Again, it's fascinating hearing from you. And I just think that the purpose of much of this is to just repel people. They look at it and they go, God, it can't be this bad. And it just makes people feel depressed. And that
Yeah.
actually is partly, it's a psychological war on the public.
when stuff is better. You know, we have all sorts of things on the TV, the news all the time, loads of stuff about the eclipse, you know, with no actual real details that of the amazing miracle that you've got a sun 93 million miles away and a moon a quarter of a million miles away, and they're both exactly the same size. Now, come on, you know, can you just point out the spiritual significance of that? Maybe, but no. Anyway, so and I hope to hear from you again soon. Alison Wright, thanks very much for joining us again.
See you.